Good afternoon. We're calling the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is April 14th, 2021. The time is 2:10 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Thanks to all our support staff. Present today are Senator Wilikowski, Co-Chair Senator Stedman, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Von Imhoff, and Senator Wilson. And Marissa and Laura, thank you for being here today. Today's agenda, HB 76, extending COVID-19 disaster emergency. This is a fourth hearing of the bill. Today's my intention is to address amendments to the Senate Finance Committee substitute for HB 76. We have, I believe, nine amendments here this afternoon, and I'm going to ask members to move their own amendment. I will object for purposes of discussion. So, number one, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go ahead and move amendment number one.
Object. Would you like to speak to amendment number one, Senator Stedman? You know it better than we do.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. amendment number one is just a clarifying amendment dealing with the RPL process and receiving federal money when we're out of session. And that would focus it to make it clearer to everybody that the funds that come in for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and from future coronavirus state and local physical recovery funds, which may be titled any which way or form come out of Washington, and if there's any residual funds coming in from the American Rescue Plan, the Act of 2021 is the funds of the subject matter. And the subject matter is if the removing the ability of the governor to accept these federal funds, and it's not to block the governor, but what it does is encourages the legislature to call ourselves back into session to address the appropriation being sent to us, or appropriation funds being sent to us from Washington. And in the event that the legislature can't call itself back into session because there, for whatever reason, too many folks on vacation or what have you, for other reasons, when in the interim, the governor then would have to call us into special session. That, therefore, both the administration, the governor, and the legislature would be at the table to fully discuss the funds coming from Washington and how they are distributed and used all over the state. So again, this section of the bill is not intended to restrict the normal RPL process, but targeting the large funds that may come in from the coronavirus situation pandemic facing the nation and the state.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, you had a question?
Yeah, I have a question. There are different repealing dates. Which repealing date do you envision this, if this were adopted by the Finance Committee, what would be the repealing date on your amendment?
We have a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Ms. Shine, Do you need Senator Hoffman to restate his question, or are you good to go?
For the record, my name is Erin Schein. I'm staff to Co-Chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there is no repeal date for this section outlined in the bill. These items are actually tied to specific packages or funding packages that would come from the federal government, so that would be the constraint on the RPL process, not for, so there is no repeal date for this section in.
Thanks for that clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions on amendment number one? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at what's going on here right now, the month of April is almost halfway through it, and right now the SNAP benefits are the ones that are under question. Does this amendment either give relief so that we're not under the pressure like we find ourselves under the SNAP money, or does it go and help that situation where we still can get the money needed out to the needy families here in the state of Alaska?
Ms. Schein.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, this section does not address that, but section 2 and section 4 in the CS before us do address the emergency allotment SNAP benefit and being able to qualify on the federal level according to the Family First Coronavirus Response Act.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. Clarify my question. My question doesn't have to do with the SNAP benefits. I just use that as an example of the pressure we're under right now. Later on, and as we deal with some of the other monies that are coming out of Washington, are there other programs whose financial assistance is going to be inhibited by either, or is it going to be actually alleviated by having this amendment go through?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the way that I look at the funds that are outlined in Section 12 are similar funds to what came to the state through CARES Act with a $1.25 billion. It is not for specific programs that are already functioning through the state operating budget or any other appropriation bill. It's quite possible that there would be funds for a program, but that would be outlined and that would be available through the RPL process outside of that.
Thank you, Ms. Schein. Senator Olson, thank you. Yep, good. Any other questions on amendment number one? I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number one. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number one is passed. Senator Wilson, amendment number two, sir.
Mr. Chair, with amendment number one passed, and I will withdraw amendment number two.
Thank you. Senator Wilson, amendment number three.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number three.
Thank you, and I'll object.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number three deals with the powers of our Commissioner of the Health and Human Services. This amendment relates to the emergency powers in this bill in Section 4. In Line 6, it adds the Maximizing, Maintaining the Funding under the Stafford Act. This amendment provides the additional specificity in Section 4 for those emergency health powers of the Commissioner. It provides the Department of Health and Social Services the necessary tools to maintain and respond to this infrastructure that has been established. As Section 4 is written, it allows that Commissioner to declare the public health emergency. Public health emergency if the Commissioner determines necessary to take those actions to protect the health of the public, including those of the health and the existing health laws, as part of the response to the ongoing recovery efforts of COVID-19. The public health emergency must help the department to maximize those certain benefits of those federal programs and flexibilities, especially under the emergency allotments under the SNAP, the Supplemental Nourishment Assistance Program, those blanket waivers from enacted by CMS, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, and the additional those waivers under the Social Security Act, the 1135 and the 1915C. This amendment also allows the Commissioner to coordinate and allocate the distribution of vaccine doses and other therapeutics in the response to the recovery of COVID-19, and it continues that strong allocation distribution and those local partnerships that have been established. Mr. Chair, I can. That pretty much sums up what this amendment number three does. It also allows them to terminate the public health emergency if they determine the public health emergency is no longer necessary.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. Under this provision, could the governor sign this bill if it were to pass, declare the emergency over, and then have the commissioner reestablish a public health emergency that only addressed other certain items to capture federal funding?
Ms. Shine, would you like to respond?
Sure. For the record, Aaron Shine, staff to Co-Chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. Through the record, Senator Wilikowski, the way that I read the bill and the amendment together, as well as existing statutory authority that the governor has for the Alaska Declaration Act, I do believe that that's true, that the governor could sign the bill, could issue a declaration, and then the public health powers that are granted to the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services would be able to carry out as outlined in amendment number 3 in response to COVID-19.
Follow up.
Thank you. And then there's the other provision here is regarding emergency procurement. And I'm just curious what that allows no bid contract authority. And is that only for this section, or is that anything related to the emergency that may be redeclared by the commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the way that I read this amendment, as well as the existing section 4, that the powers would be provided to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services for emergency procurement specific to the public health emergency requested, and then the powers specifically enumerated to the commissioner for declaring a public health emergency can be found on page 5, specific to that as well as what's being added here. So I believe, I do know that the legislative drafter is online as well as legislative legal director. They might be able to clarify, but the way that I read the amendment and the existing proposed language in section 4 would be a narrow scope for procurement.
Senator Wilikowski, we do have Ledge Legal online. If you would like a further clarification from Ledge Legal.
If I could, Mr. Chair, maybe just get a little clarification on what sort of no bid contract emergency procurement powers we would be granting the governor under this amendment, as opposed to compared to the current committee substitute.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Megan Wallace from Legislative Legal, are you available? Andrew Dunmere from Ledge Legal, are you available, sir?
Yes, through the chair, this is Andrew Dunmere from Ledge Legal.
Yes, okay. Senator Wilikowski has a question. We'll ask him to restate it for you, and if you could respond, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious about what sort of emergency procurement authority this amendment granted. Would it give no-bid contract authority? And I think it does. And then I guess the main question is it only under this section that they get that emergency procurement authority, or for anything related to the emergency that may be redeclared by the commissioner?
Through the chair, again, this is Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal. Senator Wilikowski, 36 AS 3630.310 currently allows the chief procurement officer during an emergency or on the basis of an emergency to bypass the normal procurement competitive sealed bidding process. As you stated, Senator Wilikowski, and this amendment would essentially give the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services to bypass that determination. So rather than the chief procurement officer making a determination that it's necessary to bypass normal process, this lets the commissioner do that only for procurement that is related to the public health emergency.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
I can't support this amendment, Mr. Chair. This allows the governor to sign the bill and then declare the emergency over and effectively gut everything we're trying to do in this bill. I can't support that.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dunmeyer, is there a cap on the procurement amount that is allowed under this amendment?
Through the chair, this is Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal, and Senator Olson, no, this amendment does not impose any cap upon that process.
Follow-up, Senator Olson?
I'm just a comment. I've got the same concerns there that without a limit on there, I can't support this amendment either.
Okay. Any other questions? I remove my objection. Is there any further objection?
Yes, I object, Mr. Chair.
Clerk, can you call the roll?
Yes.
Senator
Olson? No.
Senator
Wilikowski?
No. Senator Hoffman? No. Senator Stedman? Yes. Senator Bishop? Yes. Senator Von Himhoff is back at the table. Senator Von Himhoff?
Senator Von Himhoff.
We're voting on amendment number 3.
Okay, yes, I will vote on amendment number 3.
Is that a yes vote?
Yes.
Amendment number 3 has passed. Amendment number 4, Senator Wilson.
I would not offer a withdrawal amendment number 4, Mr. Chair.
Withdrawn. Senator Wilikowski, I believe.
Can we have an at ease, please?
Brief at ease. back on the record. Amendment number 5.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is, if I can just briefly talk about this. This is something that my office had been working with Senator Keel's office on. I don't think anybody's real thrilled with the current language. I've been having discussions with Senator Von Imhoff, and I know Senator Keel's office has had discussions with her. There's still some discomfort with the way that current language is drafted, and so we've decided not to offer it at this time, but to continue to work on it and potentially have an amendment on the floor. Did I state that correctly, Senator?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Those are concluding remarks, Senator.
Yes, thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Then is it your understanding, Mr. Chairman, that he's withdrawing it and will continue to work on that, and you will allow that before the bill pass, his revised amendment, you will allow before the bill is passed out of committee?
Senator Briefides. Back on the record, Senator Hoffman, I believe I heard Senator Wilikowski said they would continue to work on it and offer it up as a floor amendment. If I'm misspoken, could you correct me, Senator?
That is correct. I'm withdrawing the amendment at this time, and we'll continue to work together, and I suspect there'll be a floor amendment to hopefully that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman, thank you for clarification. Okay, amendment number 6, Senator Von Imhoff.
Okay, bear with me. So what this, yes, I'd like to bring forward amendment number 6.
I object for purposes of explanation.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, this amendment is extends the sunset date for the school operating funds reserve in Section 10 until 2025. It just gives school districts across the state a little bit more leeway to spend a longer glide ramp to spend down the ARP and COVID and CARISA money.
Thank you. Any further? Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought the current legislation expires in 2024, two and a half fiscal years. So does this amendment comply with federal law?
Ms. Schein, could you answer that?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Aaron Schein, staff to co-chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, this is for the school fund balances. It's not tied to the actual funding being received.
Thank you. Okay. I remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 6 passes. Amendment number 7, Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 7.
I'll object.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Section 11 of the CS creates a worker compensation presumption of compensability for certain workers that may contract COVID-19 during work. If we leave this section in, Mr. Chair, we're picking winners or losers. This section should either cover all workers or none. It's just basically just unfair to have workers that are intentionally or unintentionally excluded. This section put workers in a tier above other workers. I truly believe that all workers are valued, Mr. Chair, and this amendment puts all our valued workers back on the field. But since I can, I don't think I can count to 4 on this amendment, Mr. Chair, so I'm going to withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Number 7 was withdrawn. Senate number 8.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 8.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this amendment number 8 enters the new section back into the CS that passed the other body. This prohibits the CARES Act, CRISA, or ARPA funds to be used for abortion. This section, again, was included into the House, to the other body. And this just basically makes sure that it's intended that COVID relief funds aren't used for abortions or to support abortions.
Questions from committee members? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is a question for Andrew Dunmire, legislative attorney.
Andrew, Mr. Dunmire, are you available?
Yes, I'm here.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your opinion, is this amendment constitutional under the Alaska Constitution?
Through the chair, this is Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal. I think that this amendment would raise substantial constitutional questions and would probably be deemed unconstitutional in line with the Supreme Court case from a couple years ago, State versus Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. And for the record, that's 436 P3rd 984.
Sure.
Thank you. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Reardon. Mr. Dunmeyer, as you look at this amendment, if it was to go ahead and pass, would that interrupt the flow of funds that would come through to the state of Alaska? If there was a challenge based on that, on this, on the abortion issue.
Through the chair, this is Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal. Senator Olson, if you mean the flow of funds from the federal government to the state, I don't think so, but that might be a question that would be better asked of Ledge Finance.
Thank you.
Wish I'd be able to answer the question.
We'll take a brief of these. Back on the record, Megan Wallace, are you available?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. This is Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski started this conversation with a good question. So, Senator Wilikowski, will you restate that?
Senator Olson, I think, had the last question.
Mr. Wallace, my question, Senator Olson, my question had to do with if there was indeed a challenge on a constitutional basis related to the funding, would that interrupt the funding coming to the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's difficult to predict what the substance of a hypothetical lawsuit might be, but I don't foresee that a challenge to this amendment would delay or prevent the state from receiving that pot of federal funds. This amendment would relate to the state's use of those funds after they've been received from the federal government. So I don't see this as going to be a large any kind of barrier to receive the funds initially from the federal government.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if Ledge Legal knows this or maybe Ledge Finance, I don't know who, but there was a case that Mr. Dunmeyer cited that he believed would be a precedent or at least be certainly indicative of a Supreme Court decision. And I was just curious how much that case costs the state in terms of legal fees and other costs, if you had any idea, or if maybe Ledge Finance or Ms. Schein had an idea. So I guess I'll start with Ledge Legal. Do you know, Megan or Andrew?
For the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. Senator Wilikowski, I don't have that information available, but I'm sure either Ledge Finance or OMB can give you that information.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. on the record. Any further questions?
Mr.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, I'm just curious. My understanding is that under the Protect Life rule, it prohibits Title X funds from providing for abortion providers. So my understanding that is that under the COVID funds that might be available, they're already prohibited by law from being expended. And I'm just curious if anyone has a
Ms. Schein, on that. Could you further elaborate to Senator Wilikowski's?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, after our last hearing, I did some research. The Alaska Rescue or the American Rescue Plan Act did not have the Hyde Amendment attached to it. Normally, appropriations bills on the federal level have the Hyde Amendment, which was attached to appropriations bills soon after the, I think, 1976 court case of Roe v. Wade. This is an appropriation bill that does not have that rider on it. So if there are available funds that could go to an organization that would provide an abortion, it would be possible. However, there are funds that are going to flow into the state or will throughout the country that aren't going to come through the appropriation process as this legislature has a purview over. If there are funds that come through any of the funds that need to be appropriated, that would be something that could be addressed at the time that there are appropriations, but there is not a federal restriction. For the funds that will flow straight from the federal government to other entities, this amendment would not prohibit that. We don't have the ability, I think, as I understand it, to prohibit other funds, but funds that go through the legislative process, it's possible. Like I believe historically there are budgets that past legislative bodies have passed with an abortion funding ban in the back of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
So the way I see it, much of the ARP money are going into specific buckets, child care, heating assistance, very far removed from abortion funding. In fact, when I see this, when I look at the allocation of the money, other than the $1.1 billion of cash, everything else has been earmarked for specific expenditures. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that is correct. There is a lot of money that's going to be coming into Alaska and throughout the nation that is, for lack of a better word, earmarked directly to certain specific things like agriculture or education,
right.
Energy, infrastructure, and unless one of those entities that's providing funding also provides abortions that wouldn't actually provide federal funds for an abortion, I don't want to say definitively that some of the funds ultimately from the federal government through the Alaska Rescue Plans, American Rescue Plan Act, might go because the Hyde Amendment was not attached. However, the purview of the legislature as you appropriate funds can see whatever restraints you'd like to see fit put to that.
Follow up. So what you're saying, though, is that outside of this, there are federal funds already coming to the state to pay for abortions?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, not that I am aware of, but I'm just saying that the Hyde Amendment is not prohibiting that, but I don't know of any funds that the Hyde Amendment would have otherwise prevented the funds going to provide for abortions.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that the Hyde Act or Hyde Amendment was not a part of this. However, there's another rule called the Protect Life Rule, which is a federal funding rule, which my understanding is would prohibit abortion funding in this particular case. But aside from that, my staff brought me a research report from Legislative Research Services. It's a couple of years old, but it shows some of the expenses that the state has paid in abortion when we've passed abortion laws that are legal, that our attorneys have told us are unconstitutional, like we've heard about this one. And there, I could just read a couple of them in the record, Mr. Chair. In 2016, there's Planned Parenthood versus Strohr, which cost $541,000 in fees and costs. There was Planned Parenthood of Great Northwest versus State, which cost $2.183 million. There was, in 2007, State versus Planned Parenthood, which cost $23,000 plus another $940,000. There was State versus Planned Parenthood, which cost $159,000. There was State Department of Health and Social Services versus Planned Parenthood, which cost $452,000. So the state doesn't have a great track record in these sorts of cases. We have an attorney saying that it's a substantial risk of being unconstitutional. It probably is, I'm sure it is unconstitutional. And I think for that reason alone, as the Finance Committee, we should say we don't want to risk hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in potential legal fees for something which, quite frankly, is probably not even an issue because it's barred by federal law from being spent. So I would object to the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Call, take a brief at ease. Back on the record, will you call the roll?
No.
Did you have a question?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. So if I could have either OMB or Ledge Finance. I don't know who's on the phone.
We're all on the phone.
Okay, so OMB, if they want to take a stab on it. Is there federal money outside of COVID that pays for abortions at this time?
OMB was in the room. Let me see, Senator, give me just a second. We had a we're back on the record. Senator Von Imhoff, you had a question. If you could restate it, we have Alexi Painter.
Thank you, Alexi Painter. We're actually talking about an amendment about abortion funding. So the question that I have is, is there federal money outside of COVID money and CARES Act money and CARISA money and ARP money that pays for abortions in the state of Alaska today?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. There is no funding for that I am aware of in any of those bills.
In those bills, yes, but outside of those bills, Mr. Painter.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I am unaware of any specific funding. There is an enhanced FMAP federal Medicaid funding that was in a previous bill, not named in these three. However, I think that one was, I don't believe that would qualify as funding for abortion.
So it's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, in accordance with the 2001 order of the Supreme Court of the state of Alaska, the Alaska Medicaid program must, under certain circumstances, provide funding for abortions for women who receive Alaska Medicaid. So there is federal funding providing abortion under certain circumstances at this time outside of COVID money. That's how I read that.
Ms. Schein, do you have anything you want to add?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes, there are There are exceptions to abortion funding for rape, incest, and if it threatens the life of a mother, of the, and that's through the Medicaid program. But it's very
small. Follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff.
No, so I just, we've got COVID money, we have Fed money. They're two different buckets.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, I'm just curious, aside from the fact that the court probably going to throw this out, assuming it doesn't, would this ban funding for abortions in the case of rape or incest?
Megan Wallace?
No.
Do you hear Senator Wilikowski's question?
Yes, for the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. The amendment before you would only allow for money from the CARES Act, CRISA, and American Rescue Plan to be expended for mandatory services. And so it would depend on whether the service is considered mandatory under Alaska Statute 4707-030A. And so to the extent that an abortion for incest, rape, or the health of the mother falls under the mandatory provision, that it would not, that this prohibition would not apply to those circumstances.
So, Ms. Wallace, so those three analogies would be outside of this amendment.
Mr. Chair, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director, that is my understanding, and I don't know if Mr. Dunmire has a different understanding of the abortion funding. He also might have done some analysis on this because he drafted the amendment before you.
Mr. Dunmire?
Chair Bishop, may I ask you to repeat the question, please?
Were you following the conversation? And my question is, the three scenarios, the three identifiers that Megan Wallace talked about, are they outside of this amendment?
Through the chair, yes, this is Andrew Dunmire from Ledge Legal. That, I think, would actually come under federal law. The amendment references AS 4707-030A for the concept of a mandatory service, but that statute in turn references the same federal code that's cited in the amendment, 42 U.S.C. 1396 through 1396P. Off the top of my head, I don't know if those circumstances that Senator Wilikowski brought up would be considered mandatory or not under federal law.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Wilson?
Yes, sir.
Senator Olson?
I'm ready for the questions, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon?
I'm ready for the question.
Clerk, I remove my objection. Is you're maintaining your objection, Senator Wilikowski,
yes.
I believe?
I believe this is unconstitutional and it's likely to cost the state hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Would you, the main objection is maintained. Would you call the roll?
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff?
Yes.
Senator Wilson?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Bishop?
Yes. Amendment number 8 passes. Amendment number 9, Senator Wilson.
We have a brief at ease, Mr. Chair.
Brief at ease. call the meeting back to order. Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I withdraw amendment number 9, but I move amendment number 10.
I'll object for discussion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would prohibit private and public entity and state folks from requiring a vaccine for employment or access to services if the vaccine has not been fully authorized by use by the FDA. As we've seen in recent news, a couple of countries have stopped one vaccine from being used from not getting the official full authorization with additional side effects that's come through with a little bit more studies and research. We've seen the risk being used. You know, by no means or methods am I against any type of vaccines. I belong to a wonderful organization, that Rotary, that, you know, wants to eradicate polio. And we all know the risk of polio and where we're at, and we only got there with the use of vaccines. The government works a fine line between emergency and respecting individual rights and protecting safety of the community. If we allow entities to mandate vaccines that have not been FDA fully vetted or cleared, we're not striking that proper balance, Mr. Chair. People should be allowed to make those informed consents and choices based on their own tolerance for vaccines. For me personally, this is more about discrimination of use of vaccines. If one has health issues or may not want to fully disclose their conditions to why they can't be vaccinated, they should have that right to do so without trying to let the bus driver know that they have certain ailments and conditions to ride public transportation, Mr. Chair. So this amendment really is about protecting those individual freedoms and allow folks to make those health decisions. And we just want to make sure that that we're doing all our due diligence to protect the health and safety of individuals. And again, this amendment is just saying that we cannot mandate vaccines that have not been fully vetted by the FDA.
Questions for Senator Wilson? I have one question, Senators. Would this prohibit an employer from, as a condition of employment, from requiring that their employees be vaccinated?
Not only if the vaccine is under an emergency use. If it does not have full FDA clearance, then that person would be able to still be employed. But we are an at-right state, at-will employee state, Mr. Chair, so no reason needs to be given for employment.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talked about both private and public entities that are out there. Why are you including private corporations in the private sector of society to go ahead and have this restriction on them?
Through the chair, this is, we're just setting this fine line and balance. We allow private entities not to discriminate based on someone's creed, color, religion. And this is also just a way to make sure that we're protecting those rights and citizens that they are employed by.
Follow up.
With all due respect, I can understand things like race and things like that, but if you've got a private corporation and you're in charge of people that are, whose health is jeopardized because somebody doesn't want to either wear a mask or doesn't want to get vaccinated, why should a person who makes the decisions for his own company, why should he be restricted and have his hands tied behind his back?
And through the chair, we're not trying to say that you can't, health employers can allow vaccines. We're just saying that, or mandate PPE, that's the use of the job description, if it's within the job, to make sure that people are wearing their proper PPE. We do that here in the Capitol. We're just saying that we want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to make sure that the health and safety of well-being, and I all believe that the FDA is sort of that gold standard of authorization for safe drugs, and if they're not the gold standard, then in following their recommendations, we should follow the recommendations of the Food and Drug Safety and make sure that they have full use of authorization. So we're not trying to limit those employers. You know, hospitals still require you to get the Hep B and other items, and so we're just making sure that we're following, doing our due diligence to provide the safety and healthy of Alaskans.
Thank you. Any further conversation on this topic? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I have some concerns about telling a private business what they can and cannot do. I don't think that's a value that I subscribe to. And I also don't think that putting a vaccinated person in the same category as federally protected class is not something that I subscribe to either.
Any other questions? Senator Olson?
I don't have any questions. I'm just looking at this from a standpoint, and as I agree with the previous speaker, having been in business myself and having to deal with both people in the healthcare delivery system as well as in the aviation business I was in. But speaking from a medical standpoint, it is true that Senator Wilson did point out that FDA approval is still pending, but under emergency use, where we have an emergency pandemic throughout the world, where 550,000 Americans have died over this last 6 months, I think we're dealing with something that's a far more serious, and I think the public needs to be protected from this, and because of that, I'm not going to be supporting this amendment.
Any further discussion on this? I maintain my objection. Would you call the roll?
Senator Lukowski?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Von Imhoff?
No.
Senator Wilson?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yeah, no.
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator Sedman?
No.
2 yeas, 5 nays.
Amendment number 10 has failed. We have no further amendments. We're going to set this bill aside to draft the final CS. Next meeting's tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Workforce Development Overview. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Thank you. We're adjourned.